Good afternoon, Vashon and Maury Islands and all the ships at sea. This is History Worth Hearing, a presentation of the Vashon Heritage Museum, and I am your host, Chris Austin. We have a great show for you today. I'll cover what is happening at the museum. Elsa Kronquist and I will review the Vashon News Record from 1930. And of course, we'll have everyone's favorite, Island Trivia. So let's jump in. As always, we have our one caveat. All our interviews were conducted over Zoom, so I apologize in advance for any sound issues. And what show would be complete without corrections, retractions from the last show? And it looks like we don't have any. Wow, that's great. Oh, the guy that keeps track of corrections and retractions quit. Okay, that makes sense. Okay, so let's go through some upcoming events at the museum. Before it's too late, you must come and see the award-winning In-N-Out Being LGBTQ on Vashon Island. The show will close its door on Labor Day, and hopefully we're going to have a great party for that. And just so you know, the museum hours are back to normal, Wednesday through Sunday from 1 to 4 p.m. Another exhibit, Whale People, Protectors of the Sea. This exhibit was developed by the Natural History Museum, and it is an amazing piece of work. In the backyard of the museum is a sight to behold, really. It's an IMAX-type screen surrounding a 3,000-pound orca totem. And this movie will have you believing you are in the water with the whales. It's a 15-minute movie on a loop from 8 to 10 p.m. every Friday and Saturday night through August 28th, and then it goes away. Come by a little early, and you can stroll through the outdoor geology exhibit with the Salmon Walk. This is part of the Natural Wonder exhibit, which was created in partnership with the Vashon Nature Center. On March 23, 1938, George McCormick walked around the Vashon and Maury Islands shoreline in under 24 hours to collect a $67 bet. Why is that important? Well, history repeats itself. At a time to be determined in the near future, Islander-born Toby Holmes will walk around Vashon and Maury Islands to celebrate his 50th birthday. But he will be doing it for much more than $67. He'll be doing it for $50,000 in donations that will raise funds for the school board, the land trust, the food bank, the rowing club, and yours truly, the Vashon Heritage Museum. So keep an eye out for that. And of course, we have our monthly museum talk on August 12th at 7 p.m. with Jean Finley. She is the author of Mosquito Fleet of South Puget Sound. I've had a few conversations with her, and her stories are absolutely riveting. Just visit VashonHeritageMuseum.org and click on Speaker Series. From there, you can register. It's a free Zoom meeting, and I'm sure you will enjoy it. Okay, that's a lot of stuff coming up. All right, time for some trivia questions. Question number one. When and by whom was the first supermarket built in Vashon? Question number two. In 1907, a music teacher at Vashon College was dismissed for insubordination when she refused to teach what? Question number three. In May of 1928, the Vashon Boy Scout Troop took possession of their new headquarters. Where was it? And we'll have the answers for you at the end of the show. Okay, Elsa, how about before we review this paper, we do a little bit of a background on papers on the island. Each month we have tried to do another paper in the order in which they appeared. And the very first was the Van Olinda's paper, Island Home, which began in 1892. He also did the Vashon Island Press until 87. And then from 1897 to 1907, we don't know if the island had a paper. But in 1907, the Vashon Island News began, and a man in Burton, Ira Case, he felt that the paper was not giving enough stories to the southern part of the island, so he bought it, and he moved it to Burton. And so 2 years later, the Vashon Island Record began, and that's what we reviewed last month, in 1916. And that only lasted about three years as an independent paper. And then Robert Jones bought the Vashon Island News, merged the papers with the Vashon Island News Record. And 3 years later, that was purchased by P. Monroe Smock and his wife, Agnes. And that lasted for about 40 years, had a lot of longevity. And after that, of course, is the Beachcomber, which we'll probably do next month. Okay, so does that give you kind of a little background of where we are with this paper?
It does, and it also has been fun to read the first papers and, of course, seeing how these papers have developed and how the community developed. Where the first one, remember, all we talked about was agriculture, or all
that
the papers talked about was...
That was it. You were absolutely right.
And agriculture, agriculture, and farming, and how to create food or grow food.
And there was nothing really off the island that they discussed. So I'm looking at the front page of the of this paper. This is a volume 14, which is the 14th year of its existence. And that looks like it's including the Vashon Island record. I think when they merged, they kept that that volume going. And it's a 14th issue, January 16th, 1930. So interwar years, kind of a interesting time. There are some articles in here on Germany, and that's kind of a departure from the earlier newspapers because of the international coverage they have. And they say here in the headlines, the phone number is Red 821. So we've reached a point where there's two exchanges on the island. There's the red and the black. And it's the byline is, it's a week's record of all events, which is pretty good, I guess, for a 6-page paper.
Right, just like the paper of today. It's a weekly.
Yeah.
Wow.
$2 per year. Now, one of the articles that really got my attention is the title is Commandery Installation, an Impressive Ceremony. And Vashon had a commandery, which is an affiliation with the Freemasons, called the Knights Templar. And the paper goes on to say, on last Friday evening was one of the most enjoyable affairs ever staged on the island. About 100 guests of the Knights sat down to a delicious turkey dinner served by members of the Eastern Star, which was another club of sorts in its affiliation with the Freemasons. They were installing new officers, and they had a colorful names for them. For instance, I won't call out the people themselves, but there was the head guy is his title is the Eminent Commander. The second in command is the Generalissimo. Then you got a Captain General, a Standard Bearer, and Sword Bearer. So they were really into their titles, I guess.
They sure were, and a warden and a sentinel. Wow.
Yeah, and a generalissimo. I always think of that.
Generalissimo.
Tin pot, banana republics.
And that, when 100 people sat down to a turkey dinner, I mean, that was the, must have been the highlight of the season.
It had to be, and where would they do that? Where would they do that now? You know, maybe the O space, I guess.
O space, VCA. Was there a hall that they built that they sat
maybe
in?
It doesn't really say here, but you know, this is January, so I really doubt it would be outside.
Yeah, it had to be inside because it was a cold winter, as you see from other comments.
Yeah, you found those too, huh?
Are you going to talk about why they want us to cheer up? Why the cold is a good thing?
Yes, because it is so cold, people are being quarantined for chilblains, which is a weird thing to say. Chilblains is your fingers and toes that become inflamed due to cold and damp, but it's not communicable. So why would you quarantine?
Probably stay inside and stay out of the cold.
Yeah, maybe that's what they mean. But I guess the cold weather was exterminating the earwig.
That was the positive.
What did earwigs do? I thought they were harmless. I guess maybe they must be a pest for crops. Now there's only one picture in the entire paper.
Yeah. And that is really a spectacular, though not very, very visible, but it is a spectacular overview of where the dam is going to be built over the Columbia River.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And it's an artist's rendition, so that they've got an actual photograph of the earth, and then they've got an artist that has put his what he thinks the dam will look like, which is kind of an interesting technology back then, I guess.
The terrain. It's a picture of the terrain.
Correct. And the capacity will 240,000 horsepower.
And they're spending a lot of money here.
Yeah.
I mean, now we're getting into the millions of dollars to build this thing. And then supporting dams and some supporting structures and facilities are also in the hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars.
I mean, this must have been one of the biggest public work projects in the area for sure.
So it's 1930. It's been around for a while. Is this part of the work program? When did the work program start? That's a good question.
I don't think it would started quite yet.
Could
be wrong. If it did, it was in its infancy. Now, another thing that caught my attention on the front page, and I don't know if this is a real letter or entertainment. Letter of a retail merchant to wholesale house explaining failure to pay promptly. It begins with, "Dear sirs, first I want to say that the present shattered condition of my bank account makes it impossible for me to send you a check. In response to your several requests for remittance, I can't pay you until someone pays me, and there are numerous reasons why I am unable to pay at this time. I will try to enumerate a few of them. My financial condition is largely due to the effect of federal laws, state laws, county laws, city laws, bylaws, sister-in-laws, brothers-in-laws, mothers-in-laws, others-in-laws, and outlaws. Good laws and bad laws that have been crammed down my throat of an unsuspecting public." So what do you think? Is it this a real letter or just...
I think that they keep taking this opportunity to maybe poke a little fun, but they are really serious.
Well,
this is a rant, yeah.
And this is like a big section of the front page, and it's just signed by Exchange. He goes on to say that he's, in addition to paying these taxes and dodging these axes, I am requested and required to contribute to every society and organization that the inventive mind of man can conceive. They include the Society of John the Baptist, the Women's Relief, the Navy League, Orphans Home, the Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Husbands, Policeman's Benefit, the Near East Relief, the Stray Cat Society, the Disabled Hot Dog Vendors Club, the Gold Diggers Home, the Grave Diggers Union, the Chorus Girls Park, and so forth and so on. Wow.
All the nonprofits on the island.
I know it.
I mean, yeah, all the nonprofits.
Did you see the article on the mathematician goes wild?
Yes, I did. We're talking about poultry again.
That's right. Mrs. Penn doing her share.
So this is the one, what was it, 26 miles around the... So, yeah, talk about poultry the mathematician go wild. And then what is it? He's calculated that at 2.5 inches per egg, it would stretch 26 miles.
25,000 miles.
It's too small in print. I can't read it.
Oh, okay. Well, mine's a little bigger.
Miles.
The state of Washington produced 2,300,000 cases of eggs in 1928. What is a case of eggs?
Yeah.
I thought it was one of those flats that's like two dozen. It is much more than that. Is a case of eggs are 30 dozen eggs makes up a case.
Holy cow.
So 2,300,000 times 30 times 12, that's how many eggs we made. And that goes around the entire circumference of the earth in 1 year. Wow.
And that's the state of Washington.
That's
a lot of eggs. Who is eating all of those eggs? That's what I want.
How far can you ship an egg back in the 30s? So it's the state, of course, where they're consumed locally, but did we ship them like 100 miles away from where they're produced? I don't know.
Yeah, and I mean, we weren't the only, Washington State wasn't the egg capital of the world, were they? So there were other states that were producing eggs.
Yeah, oh sure, had to be.
Eggs are in everything.
Exactly.
Okay, so now you solved the mystery for me about the phone numbers, the black and red exchange.
Yes, so just like we have 463 and what's the other one, 5 something? So we have 2 exchanges on the island, I believe. And before it was 463, it was red. So you would dial RED on your phone dial. I guess that was just easier to remember why they did that. So no area codes.
No need for area codes.
Yeah.
This, you weren't going off the island with these phone calls, probably.
I also found a poem in here, A Bit of Leaven by NPJ. The name of the poem is Ace High, very short. A toast to the girls who can sing like Jeritza, another to Hollywood's beauties so fair, to the quaint and artistic, the weird modernistic, the gay and the solemn, the plump and the spare. To the keen intellectual scholarly maidens, to the fur-bearing platinum treasures we see, they are fine and I love them, but far, far above them is a girl who looks pleasant and listens to me. On page 3, we have traffic talks. It sounds like a weekly article about cars. And so from the other papers, we've seen 0 cars to the first car to having a few car repair places on the island. And now we're here to weekly articles. This is by Walter P. Chrysler. So he was the guy that started Chrysler Motors. So that's pretty interesting.
Yes, and a silent car is a good car. That's ideal. You don't want to have any squeaks. Squeaks are funny noises. That's true today too.
That is, and he, Chrysler was an engineer first and a head of sales or head of a motor company second. And a lot of guys weren't like that. The guy that did GM Motors, he was a salesman first.
This makes sense because he's talking about, don't be oversensitive when you're listening to your car, and don't think something is wrong, and enjoy the ride. And you can tell he's a salesman too. He's trying to train people who are probably very nervous about using the equipment.
Oh, that's a good point.
That's what the article talks about, yeah.
You know, it's interesting. He, talking directly to the consumer as the head of a major car company, is really unusual. I mean, you would never see that today. But then on the other hand, it reminds me of Elon Musk. I mean, he's so interacts with the public with his Twitter and this and that.
I don't see in the article where it says, buy the stock in Chrysler. But it does talk about checkups and maintenance and repair. So that's good. Our previous newsletter or newspapers were talking about how to take care of your horse and hoof and taking care of your hoof.
Yeah. Yeah. When you bought a car, remember the first one on the island that it had its own mechanic with it or something? Because there wasn't any place to get it fixed on the island.
Yes.
So I found a couple of places where there were a little column of jokes. Did you find those?
I did not, this is fun.
And we found those in a couple of papers, and they're usually pretty corny. But I found one that surprised me. It's a little saucy, a little scandalous.
Oh, I did find this, and I think you're reading the one that I thought, well, that was dumb. Anyway, go ahead.
So it's two people talking, an irate parent and a young man. Irate parent, I'll teach you to make love to my daughter. Young man, I wish you would. I'm not making much headway.
Young man, wearily, I wish you would. Didn't that fathers get out guns back
yes,
then?
Yes, that's right. Let's see. There was some all about the world. And the one that I found interesting was a Gutenberg Bible was sold to American. dispatches from somewhere in Poland, the famous Gutenberg Bible in the Library of Bernardine Fathers of Lubowa has been sold to an American for $132,000. It is one of 10 Gutenberg Bibles reported to in existence. What else caught your eye?
Lexington Ends Peace Service. The greatest peacetime mission ever performed by the U.S. Navy was being brought to a close on Thursday.
Huh.
Did you see that?
No.
The airline carrier Lexington, after generating electric power for the city of Tacoma for 30 years during its power famine, will leave Tacoma Friday for dry dock in San Francisco.
Wow.
They had an airplane carrier providing electricity, electric power for the city of Tacoma.
Well, you know what's weird is that that has happened on this island. We had a big cable that we got power from, and an anchor ripped it in half, and in the south part of the island lost power, and they brought in a ship called the Roosevelt and used its generator to power the island for months till they got that repaired. And what was kind of interesting side note on that ship was it took Admiral Perry to the North Pole.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, he took all his supplies and his dogs and ponies and whatever as close as they could get. They were on that ship.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, you're right here, Chris, because it says, when it goes, it will leave Tacoma able to stand on its own feet in the production of power. Boy, back then, we're just piecing together, trying to figure out how things work. So
that's so true. You'd expect that here, not Tacoma. Tacoma, you know, an established city for so long. That's really interesting. Another interesting thing was that we had the SS Bashona, the schedule of that ship, and we had the ferry schedule. So this was a time when you could either use a ferry or go on a mosquito fleet boat. And they say that's one of the best times to go on and off the island. There are so many options, where today, of course, we're just limited to the ferry.
So did they compete in that? Well, so they were going from different locations.
Yeah, and so the Vashona would have been going down one side of the island or the other and stopping at all those docks. You know, we had like 30 docks on the island. You know, you couldn't roll on and roll off like a ferry, but you could passengers, or you could board livestock or whatever you wanted. So it was the end of the times for the mosquito fleet. And I guess we'll know this Gene Finley's talk. She'll have a lot more information on that, which is August 12th. Yes.
At 7 p.m.
Oh, well, here's the other joke I found. It was a little surprising. While I was out with some of the boys the other night, a burglar broke into our house. And he gets asked, did he get anything? I'll say he did. My wife thought it was me coming home. Wow. 1930s.
You can zero in on those. Yeah, 1930s.
You know, kind of going with the Lexington story, there's an article in here that says the U.S. wants big battleships. And this was, like I mentioned earlier, the interwar years. And it was, people wanted to cut back on the military because, like, we already had our World War. Why do we need more ships? In fact, it states in here, the United States favors the abolition of submarines. So the United States wanted to have all countries get rid of submarines.
Really?
That is crazy. I mean, that is such a huge part of our defense these days, you know, with nuclear strike submarines and this and that. And they certainly played such a big role in World War II. Think of the German Wolfpacks.
And so why? Is it because of the cost to develop submarines?
It might have been something like that. It might have been that these are so hard to defend against. Let's make a rule that nobody has. Kind of like poisonous gas. Mm-hmm. You know, the rules of war that they, Geneva Convention and whatnot. Like these are so evil that we should outlaw them, which when it comes to war, that doesn't go very far.
this is interesting. I always wondered about this in the past papers that we read, but this one talks about there were several articles about enforcement of prohibition and how difficult it is, and should they be considered a misdemeanor? A lot of discussion about keeping or ending prohibition and making it a minor violation or a federal violation. Did you read that article?
No, I didn't. But, you know, it's interesting because Washington State went dry before the rest of the country. So we had a lot of advocates for prohibition in the state.
They had advocates for prohibition, but they didn't want to make it a major offense, if you recall.
Well, I've read it. I don't know if this is urban legend, but when we had the very first Vashon Ferry, it was christened with the last champagne bottle, or legal champagne bottle.
I think I've heard that urban legend too. In fact, I think I heard it on this show.
You listen to this show?
Wow.
I saw that on the front page that the orthopedic auxiliary was going to meet. I had no idea what that was. I looked it up on the web and I just like, what the heck is this? And at the very last page, it's got a financial report of the Vashon Island Orthopedic Auxiliary. And what they're doing is raising money that they then give to healthcare. Mm-hmm. Just like Granny's Attic today.
That's right.
I thought, wow, that's been a thing for a long time.
That's right.
And that's the Vashon News Record from 1930. Thank you, Elsa. Always appreciate it. How about some trivia answers? Okay, question number one was, when and by whom was the first supermarket built in Vashon? Garner Kimball started his grocery business in 1923 in Vashon when he purchased an interest in the Peterson Grocery. In 1925, he purchased Peterson's interest in the store, and 2 years after that, he built a new store at the corner of Bank and Vashon Highway, which is Urban Bloom now. In 1959, Kimmel and family built Vashon's first supermarket in what would become Vashon Plaza on 100th Avenue. That's where the Vashon Market, IGA, and Granny's Attic are located now. And there you have it, 1959 for the first supermarket on Vashon. Question number two. In 1907, a music instructor at Vashon College was dismissed for insubordination when she refused to teach what? The music teacher refused to teach ragtime. Mrs. I.J. Cross was hired to teach music at Vashon College, and she informed the college that she intended to, quote, raise the tone of the music department, unquote. The Seattle Daily Times reported that, quote, some of the young pupils were desirous of becoming ragtime experts. When Mrs. Cross refused to permit such a departure from the realms of composers of more hallowed name, the pupils rebelled and refused to take any instruction whatsoever in music, unquote. Mrs. Cross was dismissed, and she subsequently sued the college, but lost her case and was not awarded any lost wages. Question number three. In May of 1928, the Vashon Boy Scout Troop took possession of their new headquarters. Where was it? The Scout Cabin, as it was called, was located at what is now Ober Park, and it was part of the original 1887 Vashon School. Well, that's our show, and I hope you enjoyed it. I'd like to thank all the folks off the microphone, Bruce Hallman and Mike Suddeth, who always give me lots of material to work with, and of course to Elsa Kroonquist, who is always up for a newspaper review. If you have a topic you'd like covered on the show, please email us at radio@vashonheritage.org. Now please stay tuned for the Mostly True Radio Show coming up at 4 o'clock.